Hi, my name is Dave. I'm a really grateful member of Al-Anon. Our speaker tonight, all the way from Sherman Oaks. Ironically, the second speaker is from Sherman Oaks, too. Go figure. Please give a warm 7 o'clock Let's Rock welcome to Gretchen.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gretchen Heido, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Happy New Year! Woo! 2015, here we come. Leave 2014 in last year. You know, we really thought about it. I did a lot of writing, and John and I did some praying about what did we want to leave in 2014? What was I not willing to bring with me from last year into this year? And you know, one of the things for me, although I've been in program for many years, is that my thinking can still become distorted without these rooms. And so one of the things that I wrote down in my journal and that I was talking to God about was that piece of me that has such big ego still, and that still is able to see the negative before I can see the positive. I still am not completely trained to see the rainbow. You know, I see the cloud. And so that's one of those things. I'd like to leave that in 2014 and not bring that with me to 2015. But now I'm going to tell you my story. So let's see how that works, if I can really leave it all out. I'm a product of alcoholism. My parents had me when they were really young. They were 18. And they were really hip, slick, and cool. Such partiers. My dad's in a band, drummer. You know, he's a lot of fun. And my mom was a lot of fun, too. And I was the baby girl of these two parents who got taken along for the ride. You know, they went and did all sorts of fun things, and I was the baby in the dresser drawer that they would take out wherever they went, and I'd just be in that dresser drawer. And, you know, that's like the legacy. Oh, do you remember when you were in the dresser drawer? Well, no, I don't remember that. I don't remember being in the dresser drawer. And I don't recommend that to people who have small children. It probably doesn't seem that safe. You know, and my mom told me one story about where they had this party, and they left there was many glasses of beer left out, and I went and I drank them all, and she thought it was hilariously funny about all the throw up and everything else that happened later. And it's just like, you know, this is alcoholism, and this is the way that it goes. But with that, my family was fun. We had a good time until we didn't have a good time. And I think that that's so much of how it goes, that we have a good time until we don't. And for me, from a really small age, a really young age, I had that hole inside that was really supposed to be filled with God, but I tried to fill it with other things, be it, as I got older, you know, be it friends, be it boyfriends, be it your boyfriend, be it whatever, you know. But that's in 2014, just kidding. I'm kidding, ha ha ha. You know, but here's the thing. Wherever I went, no matter what I tried to do, no matter how far I tried to run, no matter how many things I tried to put in that hole, nothing fit and nothing made me feel better. And my parents split when I was 7 because they couldn't withstand. You know, they were only 25 when they split up. And by that time, they had me and my little brother, and I became a parent. You know, I became a parent because someone has to take care of things when that's the house that you grow up in. My dad went in and out of jail quite a bit, and that's just the way that it was. You know, we weren't allowed, a lot of people didn't let their children come and play at our house, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't let my children play at the house that I grew up in either. The police were there often. But it made it really hard to have friends, you know, to have a consistent friend. So I would get one hostage, you know, one hostage, one really good hostage. And that would be it until that ran out, until that mom got smart, and then I'd have to get another hostage. And so that's really was the story of my life for a long time. I didn't know how to have female relationships at all, nor did I understand the need for that. I mean, really, why? And I didn't learn that until I got here. You know, I didn't learn that until I came to program of why it's good to have friends that are the same sex as you. I really did not understand that. And so, you know, when I was 12, I can remember having like that first real serious boyfriend. It's real serious for 2 weeks. And when we broke up, I was devastated, heartbroken, and my feelings never matched. My reactions to the situations just didn't match. The amount of crying and devastation I felt over a 2-week relationship was just not proportionate to what had happened. But it didn't matter because I'm from alcoholism and nothing's really proportionate in those houses. So that's the way it went. And then I got another boyfriend, and then another boyfriend, and then I got the drug dealer boyfriend. And he was so much fun. I just have to say, I like fun. I like excitement. And so he was a good time. He was. 3.5 years of that, we had a lot of domestic violence between the two of us. It wasn't just him. It was me. And here's the way I would justify it. Like, if you pushed me, I'd push you back. If you pushed me, I'd throw something through the glass window of your parents' house while they were in the other room. And what? You know, if you... Whatever. I mean, the amount of things that I have done are really crazy. I mean, quite honestly, they're really crazy. And I think about it, when we get to program, at least for me, I came in because of all the things that they had done to me, and I have a very long list of theys. And you know what I realized is I stayed because of the long list of things I had done to me, and I have a really long list of those things too. And it's my own demoralizing acts that got me into these rooms. It's not what the alcoholics had done to me that kept me here. It's the things that I was doing to myself. And so staying in bad relationships, being in relationships where abuse was acceptable by me and by the other person, it just felt really comfortable. And let me be really clear, my parents, they didn't hit us. We never were hit. You know, there were a lot of thrown coffee mugs and that sort of thing, but we were never hit. That didn't happen. And it was really strange too, because our house was completely full of love. And I know that hearing about all the craziness and jail time and this and that sounds maybe like it wasn't that way. But it was. Alcoholics love big. And when that sun shines on you from an alcoholic, there is just no love like that, I gotta say. So I went to find that sun wherever I could go. I like a tan. I like it warm. I don't like the snow. And I loved me some alcoholics, you know. And so here's one thing that happened. My mom, you know, she was only 25, like I said, when they split. And she taught me really young that you can get a man all the time. It's really not hard. And so she did, and they'd move in and out of our house, and she'd just have another man. Well, one of the men that lived with us, he was fine, whatever, but they were in the middle of a breakup, and she was moving his stuff in as the other guy was moving out, and he didn't like that, and he came back that night while me and my brother were supposed to be sleeping, but he came in, and he was, like, really creepy in my room. Nothing happened, but he did that, like, creepy stare at the 9-year-old thing. And when he left, I got a chair and I like wedged it under the door because I'd seen that in some TV movie and that seemed like the appropriate thing to do. And I called my dad, who for once had a phone. We never had a phone. We always had to use the payphone. People called us at the payphone. I knew the number of the payphone. If anyone else was on the payphone, I was kind of upset because I thought it was my phone. But he had a real phone. And I called him and he showed up with his axe. And he was going to do some damage. And I don't know about you ladies, but I love a man with an axe. Nothing says love quite like a man with an axe. And that's just the truth. That's just the truth. That's the kind of crazy I am. So somewhere along the way, those wires in my head that were called sanity got crossed with the wrong types of messages that somewhere along the way I learned violence meant love. My dad shows up with an axe. He loves me. He's going to kick somebody's ass with that axe. You know, I don't think it really means love, but it sure did to me. And that's why I know today that I was violent and that I allowed violence and I caused violence. And I ended up with men who liked to be violent or needed to explode so they'd get me to be violent. And I was happy to do it, you know, and I never felt like a victim. It wasn't like, oh, you pushed me and now I'm going to call the Battered Women's Society. It was more like, oh, yeah, you know, and I was going to call my dad. And I went to college. I ended up leaving and going to college. I left that drug dealer and, you know, also very devastating until I got to college. And the great thing about college was I moved 400 miles away from home and it was a really new start. No one knew that my dad had been homeless. They didn't know he'd been to jail. They didn't know we had chickens in the front yard in the city before it was like a popular thing to have chickens. You know, now like everybody has, our neighbor has chickens. It's like cool. We like to eat the eggs, but it was not cool growing up. And they hadn't seen these things. And so I got to reinvent myself, but you know, I brought myself with me. I packed all those things that I had learned in alcoholism in a suitcase that my dad had given me along with $1,000 like, see ya. And I brought him with me to college, and that's what I did. And so I just started off again, but with no parents. And my mom got sober when I was 16, and I do have to say, she was a really good parent. She got me to go to college. She taught me a lot. I say a lot of things about parents on here, and And it's interesting because as a grown-up, we have such a great relationship today. And both of my parents are sober now, my mom for 25 and my dad for 14. But, you know, that wasn't the story when I was a kid. And so I went to college and I was just looking for love, and I found it. And then I found more of it. And, you know, one of the things that happened was with that violence, I went to this winter formal where I was crowned Rose Princess Queen. Now, this was a really big deal because in high school, I couldn't be a cheerleader because I wasn't the right kind of girl. I couldn't be on the dance squad just because I couldn't. And so I got to be like Rose Queen, and I felt like I had arrived. And so I'm there with my boyfriend, and I have on the crown, and I'm flirting with other boys because that's just what I did. And my boyfriend was really upset, and I could not understand. I know how this sounds. Like, really, you couldn't understand? No, I couldn't. And so he got upset about one of the boys that was flirting back, and I took a beer, and I threw it in his face. Like, I threw that beer in his face, and then I wasn't sorry, but I knew I should be, and I didn't want to fight. And so I think I might have said sorry. I might not have said sorry. And I tell that because there's someone else in here, too, who does those things. And there's something in here that somebody needs to hear. And if you don't hear anything in my story that you can relate to, that's okay. There's going to be another speaker next month. And I'm really glad if you can't relate to this, because not everyone has it, but this is how alcoholism affected me. So cut to last year. I am in the park going to see my brother who's homeless. And, you know, I love my brother. This is the brother that I raised. I raised him from a little boy, and I love him. And I'm so sad that he has a problem with alcohol and drugs. And there's nothing I can do to save him. I didn't know that when I got here. I thought that there was, and I really tried everything. And my dad and I, we went to see him in the park, and I said, hey, brother, you know, how you doing? How was your Thanksgiving? And he did what people who are using do, and he got really, really violent. Because remember, the way we grew up, violence means love, and you don't shrink from violence. And he was this close to me, and he threw that beer in my face. Now, mind you, I had not thought about that boy in that winter formal who I had thrown that beer in his face. I didn't think of it until a year later. My brother did that under the influence. I did it not under the influence. I did it under the influence of alcoholism and of the way that it affected me so badly growing up. Now, this year, you know, I held on to that. I really held on to it. Like, why would he do that to me? Why? I don't understand. Why? I've never done anything to him. I raised you, you know, the whole thing. And the truth is, my brother did it because that's the only thing he knows to do. And he was so uncomfortable in his skin that that was his response, just as it was my response. So although we're really different, we're really the same. Same parents, same everything, same responses. I have so much compassion for him. I sent him a Christmas card this year to my dad's address because my brother, I think, lives in a park right now. I didn't go looking for him this Thanksgiving because I don't need another beer in the face, thank God. And I got to forgive my brother, and I got to forgive myself. And I didn't need to write in the card, I forgive you. You know, that didn't need to be what forgiveness looked like. And that's real growth, because when I came here, I needed everyone to know every single thing I did, how great I was, I've forgiven you, even though I really hadn't. And, you know, God bless him. God bless him. I hope he can get into these rooms. So the other thing that I want to say is the way that I got into program was I had been engaged to an alcoholic who, I've got a whole story on that, but I only have 10 more minutes, so I won't talk about it. I got engaged to an alcoholic, we got unengaged, and here comes Cute John. And Cute John and I start our little dance, and you know, we get married within a year because that's the way you do it. It feels like a good idea. Whatever you feel, you do it fast. We did it fast, you know, we did it fast because we do everything fast. And we had no decision-making skills. We spent more time thinking about our last trip where we were going to go to San Francisco than we ever did about if we would get married or not get married. You know, just no decision-making skills. He's a good decision, though. And you know, I brought the violence into that relationship. And if he didn't pay attention to me in the way that I needed attention, which nobody could pay attention to me in the way that I needed attention, I'd just get really physical. I'd get really, really physical. And we had a therapist, and she said to me, you need to go to Al-Anon. And I was like, why? And she said, you need to go to Al-Anon because there's a lot of meetings, and it's free, and you need to come here every day. You need a lot of help. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. And she was right. I needed a lot of help. I needed a lot of help. And I think she wanted to say, because you're more than two than most of us can bear, you know, because it was really the truth. I was not pleasant. And I came to Al-Anon in the first meeting. I walk in and the speaker was talking about how she tried to light her husband on fire. And I was like, okay. People do, okay, I'll stay. That, I wanted her number, she didn't want to give it to me. That's fine. You know, and so here's the funny part. I got a sponsor because she was nice and she was funny. And I would call her and she'd say, you said what to him? And I'd be like, well, I said Mary. And she'd be like, no, you can't say that to him. I'd say, why can't I say that to him? She'd say, you can't say that to him. I didn't think she'd know what she was talking about. And then she told me I couldn't touch him. Like, I had to keep my hands off. I'm like, well, why? He really, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you can't throw a lamp at his head. That's not all right. But he locked the door again. He's ignoring me. She's like, yes, he is. Get away from him. The type of direction that she was giving me sounded totally foreign. She told me to be a woman of dignity and grace. And I was like, you think I should take ballet? What? I don't want to take ballet. I did that when I was 5. I hated it. And so began my journey. And then, you know, I hit my bottom in program. It wasn't, I had not hit a bottom yet, as crazy as that sounds. I hit it here. John and I were at a church. It was after service. I had a broken foot. He ignored me again, which, you know, he went to say hi to somebody. Damn. And he came back. I hit him with my crutch. I, you know, stabbed him with the key. I thought that was appropriate. And then I knew I was supposed to be sorry, and I wasn't sorry because there was something wrong with me. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew it wasn't okay, but I couldn't connect being sorry. I just wasn't sorry. I just wasn't. Thank God for the 12 steps. And, you know, I really earnestly started working those 12 steps. I really started working them. And what I have to say is the 12 steps are a beautiful thing, and they're powerful. And I just became willing. I became so willing to go to all the conventions and to go to the birthday parties and to wash somebody's dish, all the things that your sponsor tells you to do, pull weeds, throw ice. I know them. If you need them, come find me. I've got 25 in my phone. I can email to you. You know, I really learned what to do here. And slowly but surely, our marriage started getting better. And my husband did not get into program until close to 7 years after me. And I didn't know if he'd ever get into program. And so one of the things I want to say is, as crazy as I came in, I looked at those podium speakers and the ones that were couples. I wanted to be them. I wanted to be them, but he was just ruining my plan because he wouldn't get into program. It was his fault. It had nothing to do with me and my bad behavior, and that I had no recovery to share at all. It was only because of him. And you know, and here we are today on New Year's Day, getting to share our story and getting to share what hope looks like. And what I can say to you is, I have not been violent since then. I don't do that. And I would still feel those things, you know. It's not that all of the urges went away, but it was that I learned how to behave differently. And that part in the steps that talks about God doing for you what you can't do for yourself, he really does. He really does. And the beauty, too, is that I get to stand up here and I get to tell you my story, and the women that I sponsor, I get to walk them through. And I know what to do when they call me and they say the things that they say and they feel so much shame. I know how to break that shame, and I know how to give them the keys that were given to me. And that's the beauty of it. And we can stand up here, you know, I can tell it funny, I can tell it sad, I can tell it in whatever way it needs to be told, but it's just my truth. And it's not to entertain other people, it's to set other people free, and that's why I tell it. Because if I don't tell it, I could get mad again, you know, and that's why the 12th step really works. We give to others what we have been given. The 12 steps, working with a sponsor, prayer, the meditations, all of those things were things that really saved me. Getting friends in Al-Anon was key. You know, I talked about how I only had hostages. I have so many friends today. I'm not like, oh, you're the popular girl and you have friends that you knew in high school. It's not like that. I have friends that you say, how are you? And they want to know how you are, and they're not going to let you off with fine. They're like, no, you're not. You're not fine. What's wrong with you? You know, and I love that. And I know what is happening in people's lives, and they call me to tell me their secrets. I am a secret keeper today, not a gossip. I am a person today of integrity who can hold her head high. My husband and I have a great relationship. And that's only like one small thing that we've walked through. We have walked through it. We've walked through the death of a parent. We've walked through it. You know, money, no money. And we walked through his stuff too. You know, this is just my part and he'll get to tell you his. But we've walked through it and we've been able to find love. And love is a choice. Love is an action. Love is not just a feeling. And I didn't know that when I got here. And my second sponsor taught me that you don't go just because it doesn't feel good. You go if your stuff is completely clean and it still doesn't feel good. If you can hold your head high, keep your hands to yourself, be a woman of dignity and grace without taking ballet, doing all of those things, and you still need to go in 6 months, you can. And I've never needed to go. We're married. It's going to be 15 this year. And I'll just end with this. Last night, God and I are pretty close, and I had this dream last night. He's always spoken to me through dreams. And John and I, we were on the 5 freeway, and then suddenly we were on this hiking trail, and there were all these snowy, like, mountain tips around, and then suddenly we were in this warm, like, pool of water swimming around, and it was awesome. And I said, because we drive on the 5 all the time to get to my parents' house, and I looked at him, and I said, I didn't know that this was here. It's so beautiful. And he said, yeah, baby, it was always here. We just didn't know how to get to it. And isn't that the truth, you guys? The beauty's always been there. We just didn't know how to get to it. But it gets unlocked in this program. And if you stay, and if you're willing to go to any lengths, you will get it too. Happy New Year.
And now, also from Sherman Oaks, John.
Happy New Year, everybody. Oh my gosh, what an amazing opportunity to speak with my wife. Wow. You know, the last few days, you know, as this was approaching, I was just reflecting on our lives and how far we've come coming up on 15 years, and together 16 years. Married 15 years, and probably together about 7. So, but before I get into the stories, I want to thank David and John for asking us to speak. And when he asked, I was like, oh my gosh, wow, how amazing is this? I get to speak at my home group. And I was talking with some friends today about about some of the things that I was thinking about talking about. And we found out today, like, how many of our friends were coming. We probably have 25 people here tonight that are our friends, that are our personal close friends, that came and heard that, hey, you guys are speaking. Wow, that's really cool. We're going to come. But that's how we roll in Al-Anon. That's how we roll in Al-Anon. You know, you're not alone. And that was something I was really horrible with. I was really horrible with the whole we thing. You know, I was really horrible before I came into this program with, you know, I could do everything myself. I got it. I got that. I got this. I don't need anybody's help. And I was really incredible at getting it done by myself. And coming into Al-Anon, we're encouraged and shown that this is a we program. You know, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives became unmanageable. And I wasn't a good we person the first few years that I was here. And in fact, I was reflecting on my 7-year journey in Al-Anon, and right back in that corner, there was a table, and every time I would come into this meeting, I would sit on that table. And then I moved into the group. and then I went to an offsite, and I got to know a lot of the guys here. And slowly but surely, you know, you guys got to know me, and you reached out to me. And that reminded me of our fifth tradition. And the fifth tradition talks about our sole purpose is to help friends and family in alcoholic relationships and who've grown up with alcoholism. And you guys lived it. You guys lived that. And I also thought about, too, you know, let it begin with me. When anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Anon always be there, and let it begin with me. And you reflected that. And it was amazing because I was just thinking too about my higher power and how I see you guys as part of my higher power, and how that higher power that I believe in reflects on each one of you. And when you're here tonight, it's just amazing and it blows me away. So thank you. I really appreciate that for being here for myself, my wife, and my family. And it's really encouraging that we also get to give back as well. You've given to us and you've blessed our lives and we get to give to you. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful circle of life. So I was also raised in an alcoholic. Well, you know what? My dad never called himself an alcoholic. My dad drank his whole life. And it was really, the funny thing is, his drinking never really bothered me so much. It's what he did when he was drinking that bothered me. And the things that he did, he was a pretty mean guy. He would come home, at least a six-pack. He would start slamming his six-pack, and he would get angrier and angrier and angrier. And I was the punching bag in the family. I was the firstborn and the guy that he could take it out on. So that was basically, and I thought in my mind, you know, it seems like that it just went on forever. That childhood went on forever, and it felt like it would never end. And I felt like, wow, I didn't feel too good about my life, you know. So my dad did his thing, and my mom completely shut down. My mom completely shut down to such a way to where her body started to rot. Her teeth rotted out of her mouth. She would never take care of herself. You know, my dad slept in the bedroom. My mom slept on the couch. And that was my model for marriage. Right? You know, so later on in life, you know, I'm looking for love in all the wrong places. And I get to the part of my life where I meet Gretchen. And she called me on the phone one day, and she was asking for the rent. She was the rent collector. Which was, right? She was a rent collector. Perfect. I had a couple roommates, one of the guys wasn't paying his rent. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sick of paying this guy's rent. I'm not going to pay it anymore. Done. My name was on the lease. I was the responsible guy. But I'm not going to pay the rent anymore. Ring, ring. Hello. Hi, this is Gretchen from L&D Group. Oh, hi, Gretchen. This is John. Yeah, hi, John. I was wondering if you're going to pay rent or quit. So we talked about the rent for a few minutes. And then we talked about life for about an hour and a half. That's how I got the nickname Swoop. And that was before we met, you know. So we finally figured out a time where we could meet, and we met, and she was amazing. You know, she was such a great, great girl. But you know, we really didn't at that point in our lives didn't have the love connection. So we became friends, and we became friends for a really long time, about 5 or 6 years, where she was just in my orbit. She just kept orbiting and orbiting, and she'd come in and out of my orbit, and we would talk. And then one day I get a phone call and she says, "Hey, I'm getting married." And I go, "What? You're getting married?" She goes, "Yeah, I'm getting married." And I go, "To who?" I go, "To that guy that doesn't talk." And she goes, "No, I'm marrying another guy who's very exciting." I said, "Oh, really? Great." And I go, "You know what? You never gave me a chance." And she goes, and there was a silence on the phone. And she said, "Well, I never knew you wanted a chance." And then I had my silence on the phone. And I said, "Yeah." Okay, so what about DJing my wedding? Okay, can you do that? Can you give me a deal? And that's what I did for a living back then. But So, cut to a few months later, ring, ring, this is Gretchen. "Yeah, hi, hey, what's going on?" "I broke up with him." "Oh, really?" "Nice. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm so incredibly sorry to hear that." We started to date shortly after that. I gave her a little space, maybe a couple weeks. You know, she needed to clear out her, you know, her baggage there. And she was over at my house one day, and we looked at each other and we said, you know, if we ever get together, we're going to get married. And she agreed. And cut to 11 months later, we were walking down the aisle. And it was pretty amazing, you know. And here we are, both kids coming from alcoholic homes with zero tools on how to do relationships. 11 months later, we're walking down the aisle to live happily ever after. Yes! She was so cute. And, you know, cut to, you know, Mary walked down the aisle. The first thing we did was go on our honeymoon, and I just needed to take a nap. I just needed to take a nap, and that was a really big deal for Gretchen, because I got a list. I got a list, and we got to hit 10 different things, and we have to do this, and we have to do that. And I'm like, whoa. I'm going to take a nap. And that didn't work out too well. So, but we ended up having a nice honeymoon. We got home. And off we are into our lives. Wow, and it got bad. It got bad really fast. It got really bad. I found that my coping mechanism, because what happened when I was a kid, was things got really big in my house, and I shut down. I shut down, and I would go and hide. I would go outside. I would go hang out with my friends. There was lots of different things that I would do to busy myself and get away from my house. And one of the things was I would go hide in a closet. It was a safe place, you know? And, I think you know where this is going. I finally came out of the closet. But that was my life back then. I was shut down, completely shut down. And I was in immense fear, you know, fear for my life. It was hard. It was really hard growing up in my house. And then coming into our relationship, my dad being angry and aggressive, and I marry an angry and aggressive woman, and it's really easy to point fingers and say, but look at her, she's the crazy one. Look at that. Look at what she just did. Key in the neck. Oh yeah, crazy. You know, I'm the normie guy. You know, I didn't do anything to deserve that. You know, and this is the thing. Violence is never okay. Violence is never okay in any relationship. And I told her, I said, you know what? We're not going to do that in this relationship. If you do that, I'm going to leave. And then she did it again and a few more times. But the thing is, after getting into Al-Anon, I got to find out what my part was back then. Because I didn't know. Because what she was doing looked so big. It just looked so big, and I could come across being the victim, and I could play that part so well. Look at me, poor guy. He's just a hardworking guy, you know? What did he do to deserve that? But this was the thing, I had no tools. And all Gretchen wanted to do was connect. I didn't know that. All she wanted to do was connect, but I was a runner, and I didn't know how to connect. I didn't know how to do this. I didn't know how to stop and listen. I didn't know how to love her the way that she needed to be loved. You know, there was some other stuff going on too, but, you know, and, you know, we're both humans. We didn't know how to meet each other's needs. You know, I didn't know how Gretchen received love, and she certainly didn't know how I received love. And, and it was an interesting time. You know, we had 2 years of really hardcore violence. And this was the dance. We would do the dance. You know, I would shut down, she would get big. I would shut down even more, she would get bigger and throw a lamp. I would shut down and, you know, she would, you know, try to kick down the door. But the thing is, what I was doing is I was starving my wife. I was starving her for attention. Because not only did I shut down, but I ignored her. I completely ignored her. In fact, there were times in our relationship where we went a couple weeks where I didn't talk to her in our house. This is my wife I'm not talking to. Wow, how does that make her feel? Wow, my part in that. And that's really hard to look at, is you know, being a runner and coming to terms with all of the things that I did to bring to that relationship. And today our life is so different. Today our life is so incredibly different. Today I know that you know how she receives love, and I love to give that to her to the best of my ability. And I love giving her love, and she does the same for me. You know, we have kindness today in our house. We didn't know how to be kind to each other back then. We certainly didn't know how to forgive. Oh man, I could carry on a grudge for a really long time. And my thing was this. I would go dark. And I guess the alcoholic would say that was a blackout. I would have an emotional blackout where I'd go so incredibly dark, and something inside of here was so broken that it wanted me to go darker and deeper and darker. And it was so hard for me to break out of what I was doing. And until I came here and I got to know you guys. And I thank God for the recession that happened in 2007, 2008, because the way I built myself up was I thought that I grew up in a trailer park, basically, you know, very, very meager. Went from apartment to trailer park. My parents never really had any money. And our big thing was, if we could just win the lottery, life would be so good. And of course, we never won the lottery, but I took that with me. And I embarked on a journey into I'm going to build great businesses. I'm going to build a lot of them, and I'm going to be rich. Because when I have some money, I'm going to be untouchable. Nobody's going to be able to hurt me. Nobody's going to be able to do anything. I'm the man. I'm the man if I got some money. And until my money was gone. And my money went away in 2008. A lot of it. And, but gosh, it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because I got to come here because I finally came to the end of myself. With all that money, I was hurting people. I'm not going to say that word. I was not nice. And I would treat people horribly, and including my wife, even to the point, to give you an idea, you know, just the knucklehead I was. I'd come home from working, and I was doing flashy stuff, riding in limos and doing this and going to great parties and all that. And I'd come home, and here's my wife with our little guy, and she was pregnant, you know, boob milk everywhere. And I'd look at her and I'd go, I'm bored in our relationship. I'm so bored. Wow. Yeah, that's the prize I was. Mr. Excitement. So, but I'm thankful that I came here. And she is too. Because I was a normie and I had everything. I had all the money I needed. And until I didn't have it anymore. And I'm really thankful that you let it begin with you, and you taught me how to let it begin with me, and you guys shared with me, and you showed me, like, okay, what kind of life do you want? What do you want with your life? What do you want to do? And you know, what kind of life do you want today? And I didn't know. I didn't know what was possible. I had no idea what was possible. And you guys showed me some pretty amazing marriages and relationships and how you were doing it. And that was amazing. And I'm forever in debt to this room for being here and for all the rooms. I'm so thankful to be part of the Al-Anon family group worldwide. Not just here in La Cañada, but worldwide. You know, we have a family. And that's amazing, you know, and that has profoundly impacted my life forever, and forever I will be a lifer in this program. And I thank you guys for that. And I just want to share a few other things that happened in our family. By the way, Gretchen and I are doing great today. We're doing so great. You know, we've got so many great tools. We love on each other. We pray together. You know, that's an important thing for us, in our family. And what you guys have given us, we get to give to our kids. And we had a situation, a couple months ago where my son Jonah, who's 8 years old, was at school. And they have this thing that was going on at school called corn dogging. Yes, a lot of eye attack. And later on that night, he's like, Dad, I'm really hurting. And I said, what's going on? He goes, my situation hurts. And I said, okay, do you want to go to the doctor? And this was right at bedtime, and he was starting to cry. And I already knew we were going to do something about this. And he said, yeah. And immediately we got into action, because we're good at action. I call her. She calls me back. I'm getting on the internet to find out what this is. She pulls up the car. We load him in, take him to the hospital. We find out that he's got a twisted testicle. Yeah, what? And so because of this thing that happened, he's got a twisted testicle. So we find out that he has to have emergency surgery, and he's got about 6+ hours to deal with it, or else he will lose it. And one of the most amazing things happened is we called you guys. We called you guys, and you guys said, what can we do? What can we do? You jumped into action. And one of our friends who's sitting here right now jumped into action to hold our hands while we were sitting there in the emergency while our kid's getting ready to be rolled into surgery. And she held our hands and she was there for us. And I'll never forget that. Katie, thank you. Your family's special to us. And we watched our little guy roll off into surgery, and he was brave. He was so brave. So he got out of surgery, everything was fine. He now is very bionic. And he comes home, and the boys are recouping, or actually he's recouping. And my oldest, Jake, they're arguing over something like, I think it was, you know, Chinese checkers or something like that. They got into something about Chinese checkers. And they come in to tell me, Dad, he did this with the Chinese checkers. Oh, yeah, well, you know what? And this is what we say in our house. Well, you guys need to work that out. And they tried to work it out right then and there, but Jake blew his top and kicked Jonah right in the, say it with me, situation. So here we are 2 days later, and at that moment, all my defects and all my defaults started to, the circuit breakers were blowing up, and the first thing that came to mind was I wanted to smash my 10-year-old, because that's what my dad did to me, and I was going to smash him. But I didn't, because the next thought, and that's the thought I'm responsible for, and that's the action that I took, was you told me to take care of first things first. First things first was to grab my little guy to make sure he was okay. And then I called Gretchen. No, she was actually in the other room. We loaded him up back in the car, and we went back down to the emergency, and of course, he was okay. But we came home, and this is the most interesting thing that happened, is we came home that night, and our son, who's 10 years old, came to us and said, Mom and Dad, I want to tell you something. And we said, okay, what's up? And I'm still so livid. And I'm trying to keep it down. And he said, I've got an anger problem. And I want to talk to you and Mom about that. So we got to sit down with him, and we got to hear him out and hear what he was saying. He goes, I got an anger problem, and I need you to help me out with that. And we said, okay. And I was still pretty livid, so I said, thanks for saying that. And I'm gonna let, you know, Gretchen talk to you, because I didn't want to go take a shower. And I'm thankful that my first thought also before we did that was I got to call my sponsor. So first things first, take care of the kid, call my sponsor. He said, we do not smash our kids. I said, okay, I'm gonna go with that. And you know, cut two, coming back to Jake, and he said, I have an anger problem. I went to go take my shower. I heard him out. I was quiet. You taught me how to shut my yapper and to let him feel his feelings. You know, because you also taught me, too, that not only do I have a higher power, and aggression has a higher power, but our kids also have their own higher powers that they're going to meet. And so I'm finishing up my shower, I get out, and drying off, and getting dressed, and here comes Jake. And he feels horrible. And he said, Dad, he goes, I really feel horrible about what happened today. I said, I know. I go, you know what? We admitted that we were powerless. Me and Mommy admitted that we were powerless too. And that our lives were unmanageable. And you know what me and Mommy did is we went to Al-Anon and we got to meet our higher power. And I got to also tell you too, I said, the word we means you're not alone. Me and Mommy did the same thing. And I go, you're not a hopeless case, because that's what you told me. You're not a hopeless case. And you know, when I came in and I shared with you guys all the stuff that I was going through, you didn't smash me. You didn't do that to me. You loved on me. And you raised me up and you gave me love. And that broken heart that I had back here is now on its way to being healed. And it's beautiful. And I got to share that with my son. And so I wanna thank everybody here for showing me the most amazing way and being God with skin on. And I really appreciate you guys, and I love it that it's, you know, let it begin with me. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon, this was the hand I was used to, the clenched fist, and this is what you guys showed me. This is the hand of Al-Anon, and you embraced me and you blessed me, and now I get to bless others. And that's my give back, and I appreciate you all for that, and God bless you all. Happy New Year.
Logistics. Most of you know that my meeting has never had a dark night.